This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, is with me, and we're to Hong Kong to our colleague Andrew Collier, the managing director of Orient Capital Research. The attendance of the Chinese economy is universal, but what is to be done after the lockdowns, after the supply chain tangle, after the question about inflation worldwide? The headline in the South China Morning Post is suggestive. Biden's Indo-Pacific economic framework unlikely to drive Japanese and South Korean businesses from China. Subhead, under the New Deal, signing members, including Japan, South Korea, and others, will be able to form supply chains that exclude China. So we have two pieces of a puzzle here. Andy, a very good day to you in Hong Kong. The supply chain is always at the top of, can we solve this? Is the supply chain changing? Has the COVID catastrophe, followed by the inflation story, followed by the lack of confidence in the supply chain, has that changed the future for China's dominance of exports? Good evening to you.
Yes, good evening. Yes, it has affected China's strategic outlook, because now they're facing greater competition. They have to move some of their companies to Vietnam. Some of the Vietnamese and Thailand firms are getting a business. But at the end of the day, basically American and Western firms really need Chinese supply factories. And China itself needs Western factories, because it's important to their economy. So I'm afraid that the decoupling is going to be a slow and probably non-existent process.
And by decoupling, you mean not depending entirely or dominantly on China's supply chain, having alternatives? Is that what you mean by halfway decoupling?
You can move some of your production into other countries, but they just do not have the capacity that China has for the most part. So we're still kind of, it's a bad marriage, basically.
And Gordon, before I turn away from this, has China recognized this? Do you see this in the Beijing remarks about how the world is going to change post-pandemic?
There's a lot of propaganda about decoupling, about, for instance, globalization. And so it's very much on their minds. And they believe that decoupling will not occur. And they believe the world will continue to globalize. But it's always there in the background of what they write.
You have a question for Andy.
Andy, you know, it's my sense that when you have the COVID lockdowns, companies outside China are viewing this as a temporary disruption. Things will get back to normal. Is that your perception of the way companies are viewing China at this moment?
I wouldn't agree with that. I think that there's a real attitude now that this kind of disruption, which has gone on for a number of months or a year, is something that is a politically driven event. And a lot of companies from the West and America are concerned that other politically driven events could occur. That doesn't mean they're going to close up shop. I mean, I noticed Tesla just moved its employees into a factory to live there permanently so they can keep producing without interacting with other people. But for the most part, I think they're very concerned with the shifting winds of political regulation in China.
The winds in China blow towards Hong Kong all the time these days. Is there a separate prospect for Hong Kong, quite separate from what's going to happen in the export model on the mainland? I'm thinking of your financial markets and of your educational facilities.
Well, those are questions I sit around at dinner parties every weekend debating with lots of people. No one knows the answer to that. But there is the assumption that mainland money will replace a lot of Western money, and that post-COVID, Hong Kong will bounce back. The question is long-term whether Hong Kong can really survive without a lot of the French, Germans, Swiss, and Americans and Brits who've left. And it's unlikely that all of them will come back. A few will trickle back, but a lot won't. And Hong Kong is going to lose those important, valuable connections.
Gordon, I understand you have an observation of an unhappy anniversary. Go ahead.
Andy, we're fast approaching July 1. July 1 is the 25th anniversary of the handover of Hong Kong from Britain to China. That is halfway through the 50-year period where Beijing promised a high degree of autonomy under the one country, two systems formula. In general, what is Hong Kong like right now in the midway point to 2047?
Once again, I don't know where to start. You mentioned this earlier, and I was scratching my head thinking, have I been invited to any handover parties? And the answer is no. So obviously, there's not a lot of rejoice among those of us who live here about the handover. I think there was going to be some official events. In terms of the future, I mean, it doesn't look, it's kind of dismal right now. I mean, there's a lot of moaning about the decline of the educational system, about the rule of law. And even some business people are worried about writing contracts in Hong Kong. It's not over. And as I said, you know, there could be some turnaround going forward. But right now, we're all feeling rather grim.
The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, that was the presenting issue as the president of the United States reached Tokyo, the gathering of what appear to be partners throughout the region for trade. However, there is also the theme that this is a coalition either opposing China or working together to limit the Chinese aggression. Does that change the situation for China profoundly? I note that we started about South Korea and Japan, but it's a much larger coalition than that. Is this framework now seen in China or in Hong Kong as an opponent?
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a major issue because the Chinese have been downplaying it. But certainly any attempt by the United States to corral a bunch of Southeast Asian nations to operate without China involved is going to be seen as a security and economic competition. So the Chinese don't like that. But because the agreement that Biden is putting forward is so weak, the Chinese don't see it as a very significant threat.
Is it the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Is it understood to be at that intention, if not scale yet, the what was rejected, what is this now, 8-9 years ago?
It falls far short of that, and that's the problem. Is I think Biden's hemmed in by domestic considerations of the economy. They don't want free trade that could mean jobs moving to Thailand. So basically, he gave Southeast Asia security guarantees and some sort of weak-kneed agreements. But they're all sitting there going, look, we do plenty of business with China. We're not going to make them angry. We want more business from the United States.
Gordon?
Andy, I've always got to ask you this. What's the state of the property market in Hong Kong right now?
Well, I have a friend who's about to buy a flat. She's a former reporter for the BBC, so she certainly feels optimistic. John Lee, who's a new chief executive coming into office shortly, is a security guy. He's basically was the head of the police force. And one of his mandates is to improve housing for the poor in Hong Kong, which is terrible. People live in tiny flats. The problem with that is that that would destroy the middle class wealth because a lot of people have a lot of money tied up in very expensive apartments. So Hong Kong's caught in a hard place. So I think, but John Lee may be pushed by Beijing to really try to lower the value of housing, which is going to be a very interesting dynamic in 2023.
Andrew Collier is the managing director of Orient Capital Research. He is in Hong Kong. These are days when you cannot be confident what the future looks like because of the lockdown, because of the recovery, because of worldwide inflation, and for heaven's sakes also because of the threat, always the threat, of a war in East Asia over Taiwan. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.